Hello and welcome to this PSG Think Big series podcast. In this program, Alicia Seckham speaks to Dr. Leon Schreiber, the Minister of Home Affairs, about Home Affairs 2.0, getting the system back online.
Hello, you're watching the Think Big series brought to you by PSG. I'm Alicia Seckham. Well, since taking over the reins just over a year ago, South Africa's Minister of Home Affairs, Leon Schreiber, has been on mission overhaul. The intent clear, right? To transform South Africa into a cutting-edge digital state and society. So today, we're checking in on where things are at with the department's five-year plan. And given the progress made so far, is the five-year timeline to turn things around still a viable one? And Minister Leon Schreiber joins us for that discussion today. Minister, thanks so much for joining us in conversation. And I want to start off with the big picture first. Just over a year with the government of national unity in place, your assessment of things as they stand right now, and I'm hoping for a frank assessment here, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, I think it's great to be with you. Thank you very much for the invitation. From a Home Affairs perspective, we are moving at light speed. We really have a number of key reforms that are underway and in many cases that have already yielded fruit. So if we think about the civic side of the equation, this is your ID documents, passports, all kinds of certificates. There we have set a new record for the number of smart IDs issued in a year, just around 3.5 million, exceeding the target by almost a million. And we have just launched this very exciting new partnership, a digital partnership with the banks and the banking sector in South Africa that's going to expand access to these vital services to thousands, over 1,000 bank branches, and critically onto digital banking apps as well. And we really are incredibly excited about the convenience, the security, and the efficiency that that reform is going to bring. So those are the sort of civic side of things, and South Africans are experiencing these improvements really on a daily basis, and every day we're moving forward. On the immigration side, we have piloted a whole new approach where we are digitalizing the visa process from start to finish. We've demonstrated with the trusted tour operator scheme that this approach works, because we traditionally, South Africa has underperformed very badly in markets like China and India. So we partnered with a handful of tour operators in those countries to test whether visa reform would actually make such a big difference, because people were always complaining that they had to travel great distances, they had to stand in long queues, they had to wait weeks for their passport with a visa to come back, and often they would miss their flight. So it was just a real handbrake on South Africa's tourism sector. And we piloted it with the Trusted Tour Operator scheme, and it has shot the lights out. We've got over 27,000 additional tourists in just 4 or 5 months through that small, limited scheme. And that makes us very excited for the really big reform, which is the electronic travel authorization, or the ETA, that we are set to roll out within really the next few weeks. It's going to be a phased rollout where we're starting with a small cohort, but over time, it's going to automate South Africa's visa processes. And we want to really become a world leader in that space to clamp down on fraud and corruption, but also to really improve the efficiency and make it and really unlock that tourism market for South Africa. We've also really had a big focus on anti-corruption efforts. We've dismissed 38 officials. We've had a number of prosecutions. We have done more deportations in the past year, over 51,000, than South Africa has seen for at least half a decade. So we're really moving on all fronts to really take a department that has long been maligned as almost the symbol of government inefficiency, and demonstrate that things can get better when we really focus on reform and embracing digital transformation.
Yeah. I like that you start with the proof points of the successes you've managed to reap over the past year, because it gives us an indication of the level and the extent of the transformation we are seeing within the department. And, you know, I asked the question of the government of national unity, because you've said before that you believe your department will be unrecognizable in 5 years, but it's if the GNU holds. So there's a lot riding on this, right? Are you confident that the momentum that you've managed to, start things off with is going to be able to be sustained?
Well, I think as in any situation, you really have to focus on what you can control. And I have to throw in, if we're talking proof points, the visa backlog that we cleared, which was 10 years old, 306,000 applications, and that has now been processed. So I think the improvements at Home Affairs do speak for themselves, and we're really focused on everywhere that we have responsibility and control to move as fast as we can and to demonstrate to South Africans that indeed reform is happening under the GNU and that things can get better, even in places where you never thought that might be possible. But you're, of course, right that we live under political dynamics. And, this is a new world for South Africa. I wrote a book in 2018 predicting exactly this, that the ANC would lose its majority and that we would end up with coalition country, as I termed it back then. So I have never been overly alarmed as we went through some of the teething problems and the growing pains, because it is a massive shift for our country. We have never had a coalition government. We are used to decades of one-party rule, not only after 1994, but also before 1994, the idea that there's one party that calls the shots. That's no longer the case. And we as a society now have to really mature. We have to learn to cooperate. And I think if you look at some of the things that the GNU has gone through, including not only the dispute around the budget and the proposal to increase the VAT, but also the fact that we were then subsequently able to actually get over that disagreement and pass a budget. Those are big milestones in any coalition government anywhere in the world. And we've recently seen countries that have had coalitions for decades actually falling at that hurdle and falling on other policy hurdles that the GNU has managed to navigate. So yes, it is far from perfect, and we certainly need a much more structured approach on policy questions, on dispute resolution. But I think from the Home Affairs perspective, we are also working very well together as the GNU in this space. I mean, I have a deputy minister from the ANC, Njabula Nzuza, and really across the board in this space, I think we are demonstrating just how powerful the GNU can be, because we're working together in good faith. We're trying to solve real problems. We're not having sort of high level ideological discussions. We're trying to solve problems that South Africans experience every day. And I think that that focus has served us well and is also a proof point around the capacity that the GNU can actually work, and that coalition politics, which really is now the norm in South Africa going forward, is something that can work for our country.
Yeah. Look, your department is probably the most citizen-facing ministry, right? Every citizen experiences you from birth through things like marriage and travel, work, all the way through to death. So getting things right, imperative here. And a lot of that, Minister, is hinging on your digital transformation within the system. It also manages to give you a better handle, as you alluded to right at the top, of on abuse of power, fraud, corruption as well, which is endemic in this department because of poor accountability. But also, once you make this easier, people won't need to pay others, bribe others, to provide easier routes, right?
Well, I think it goes actually even deeper than that. So on the one hand, of course, there's the accountability side of the equation where we are really focused. We have a standing partnership with the Special Investigating Unit that we're very grateful for. And we have recently established an anti-corruption forum focusing on this sector that brings together everyone from Home Affairs' counter-corruption unit to the SIU, the prosecuting authority, the police, setting a very clear tone and sending a clear message to officials that corruption will not be tolerated. And more than that, it will not be a long, dragged out process if you are caught. We want to move quickly and dismiss people who are not, who don't want to be part of this reform journey that we're walking. But we are not only stopping there. And I think this is where the key point comes. We are not interested only in treating the symptoms. Every time there is a case like this, we ask the question, what is the systemic loophole? What is the gap? What is the failure in the system that made it possible for someone to engage in a particular act of corruption? And I think that is critically important, because then it enables us to go and fix the root cause of problems, the root cause of systems that have been very manual, paper-based, and not well managed for many years. And that's really why people have managed to get away with these things for so long. Yeah. So automation and digital transformation is really a key part of closing off that space for human bias, for human discretion, for human interference, and making sure that we use the technology that we have at our disposal to automate processes and to understand whenever someone intervenes in a process, what exactly they did. We can monitor everything and we can close off those gaps. So I think this is really where the fundamental transformation is taking place, where it hopefully in future will not really matter that much who's the minister, but that you have a system in place that is able to actually lock out people who are trying to corrupt it, and to make sure that you have technology then on your side to deal with cases where they happen. So this is really the model that we're trying to pursue. And I think that is really starting to yield fruits. And I mean, the great thing about this approach is that it improves both security and anti-corruption measures, but also efficiency. And when we talk about automating your smart ID and your passport process, if you are able to go on your banking app or go into your local bank branch to order this new document, you look into a camera, you verify your identity with your face, not because some official says that, okay, I believe who you say you are, but because your face biometrics matches our database, that's going to be a more efficient experience, and if closed off that space for interference.
Yeah. And of course, all of this, key minister, where this is a big contributor to our illegal immigrant situation, right? You know, while you've mentioned some of the progress you've made, when it comes to this particular matter, you've described the restoration of border security as a mountain to conquer. What are the biggest obstacles to achieving the levels of border security that the country needs?
Well, I think you have to start with describing the current reality. And the reality is that we've had 30 years of underinvestment, of really going backwards in this environment. And, you know, everything from infrastructure to ethics to investment has just been really a series of setbacks. And now you have to deal with a problem that has been 30 years in the making. So I've said from day one, there's no magic wand to any of the problems that we're dealing with. It is only focused systematic reform over time that is actually going to enable us to deal with these problems. So there are a number of sides, of course, to the equation when it comes to people who are in the country illegally. The first part is really also on the civic side. And I think this gets neglected sometimes, but we have to understand the role that the green barcoded ID book actually plays in this identity fraud and illegal immigration space, because there's still 18 million people who carry that book. And we know that it is, according to research, the most defrauded document on the African continent. It's a very simple reason why that's the case, because it has these manual pages where you can put someone's photo in there who's not actually the holder of that book. And it contributes massively to this particular problem. So that is why our drive to massively expand access to smart IDs is so important, because we want to replace the green ID book, make sure everyone is able to get the more secure document, and then do away with the green ID book as a form of identification, so that we no longer have this gaping wound that criminals and syndicates are able to exploit. So that's one part of the equation on the civics front. But when it comes to the actual border environment, I think the Border Management Authority, in the 2 years that it has existed, has made really meaningful progress in creating a single command and control structure at the border. People don't realize, but previously you would have had seven different departments and agencies all doing their own things at the border, whether it's health or agriculture or home affairs or SAPS or any of these. They have now been integrated into the BMA, and that has created a much more clear control environment at the border, which is already an important step forward. We've also piloted the use of technology, and we've demonstrated the power of digital transformation for us to deal with some of these threats in the border environment. So we've piloted the use of drones. That has led to a 215% increase in our detection of people trying to cross illegally and prevention of that subsequently. So if we can invest in those kind of resources, we can have a real improvement and move towards creating really a digital border environment that can do surveillance and automated processing. This is also critically important. Just like we've said with the civics environment, the process of entering and exiting South Africa must be automated. It must be linked to your biometrics. And then you must show up at a gate there, and the gate either opens or doesn't. And that also negates all the role and the space for corruption and all the things that we see in this environment. So again, technology is really key there. But I just want to make one more point. All of this is contingent on politicians funding the BMA to the extent that is required, because you will not find a politician in South Africa who doesn't complain about this problem. And even worse, you won't, you'll find some who exploit this problem and who try to use it for political gain. But when it's time to put their money where their mouth is and actually say, let's close down some underperforming programs, let's deal with corruption in the public sector so that we can fund the BMA, they go quiet. And that is really a crusade that I'm on to make the case that this is a great investment for South Africa, because if we clamp down on illicit trade, it will help us improve tax collection. It will reduce the pressure on law enforcement in the country. It is really the best investment South Africa can make right now, is capacitating the Border Management Authority.
I'm going to get into those budgetary commitments and constraints in just a bit. Before I do, and I know, Minister, that we're dealing with undocumented people here, which makes things a bit tricky, but any way to put numbers to the problem so that we can actually quantify the extent of the problem and how much it's costing the South African economy?
No, I don't think you can do that. I think you can look at some of the statistics that Stats SA has brought forward, because they are able to do a count through the census process, which does get to everyone. And I think there you find, I don't have the exact number on hand now, but it's a few million. It's not some of the sort of massively inflated numbers that are sometimes used. But I think the fundamental point is that our system has actually blocked the state from identifying people who are in the country illegally and undocumented. So by definition, these are people who are ghosts. They are not someone that you've got biometrics for. And you're actually precluded from really doing that work in a focused way. So one of the things that we would like to do, obviously, is firstly, you know, deal with some of the routine cases that Home Affairs is currently really under pressure over. So things like IDs and passports, those are things we want to really automate and decentralize so that you don't have to go to a Home Affairs office and stand in queue to get a routine document like that. That will then free us up to do a number of important things. Firstly, and a part that is very often neglected, is to deal with undocumented South Africans. And this is where things become really dangerous when we say that if you don't have a document, you're an illegal foreigner by definition. There are South Africans who are undocumented because of the failures of the past 30 years, and even going back further. Must remember that before 1994, there were massive sections of our society that were not seen as South Africans. They were never actually documented. The tragedy is that this has not been resolved. And what I would like to do is get these routine transactions out of the way so that Home Affairs can go into communities, particularly rural communities, and call community meetings and systematically document every South African family there who has never been had their birth registered and has never had an ID or proof of their birthright as a South African citizen. So that's where we hope to get on the side of undocumented South Africans. And that obviously then leaves undocumented foreigners in most cases who are illegally in the country. And there again, we want to use technology. We want to insist that you have to give us your biometrics, that you cannot operate in society if you don't comply with the same standards that South Africans are expected to comply with. South Africans are recorded in the population register. And, you know, any document that you get is ultimately going to be linked to your biometrics. It's time for us to make sure that we're able to actually identify people in the country illegally. And then we can obviously start managing the problem from there. But for now, the way the system has operated for 30 years has not enabled that.
Absolutely. And as you highlight, the goal here is to make it, yes, difficult to enter illegally, but simultaneously, Minister, you're working at making it easier and straightforward to enter this country legally as well. And that throwing the spotlight on the electronic travel authorization documents for foreigners entering South Africa and efficient visa policy acting as a lever for economic growth and job creation.
Yes, this is why I think Home Affairs is one of the most critical departments in the state, because it has these multiple sides. It's got not only one function, and this is really important that we understand this clearly, because that's where the opportunities sit. It's got a national security function, and I should mention again, we have done more deportations in the past year than South Africa has seen in at least half a decade. And part of that is also technology helping us to do fingerprint scans and other things. But it's obviously then also got the civic services side. That's what you mentioned earlier, where every South African interacts with this department. But thirdly, it is an economic enabler. And given our massive challenge with unemployment and low economic growth, it is imperative that we use every economic lever we can to actually contribute to that apex priority of the government of national unity, which is to grow the economy and create jobs. I think in Home Affairs, we've really taken that very seriously. And we are positioning the department to actually play this role as an economic enabler as well. So there's that old expression, you must be able to walk and chew at the same time. And that's really the case in Home Affairs. And so we're also looking at the opportunities that immigration and travel offers South Africa. And here, as you've said, the electronic travel authorization is really the signature reform that we're working on. The basic idea is that if you are from a country that requires a visa to visit South Africa as a tourist, you find an impossible situation. You have to travel great distances. You have to go to a South African mission somewhere. And as I said, sometimes people even get the visa outcome after their plane has left. It's just catastrophic for South Africa's tourism potential. So we are moving all of that online. Not only do we want you to be able to apply online, but we are also automating the adjudication side of things. We are using really the latest machine learning technology, which can identify whether the passport that you are traveling on is authentic or not. And basically how it works is you will have to not only submit an application online, but also take a photo of your passport's information page. You have to upload a selfie. We then check that passport to verify, even just from a photo, whether it is authentic. We match the face that is on your passport to the selfie that you upload so that we know you are the holder of that passport. And then we use that machine learning algorithm to do the risk checks and give you your visa approval if you're a legitimate traveler, really within seconds. You then store that on the wallet on your phone. And when you arrive in South Africa, you will look into a third camera where we will then match your face to the selfie and the passport photo to verify that the traveler who has arrived at the airport is the same person who applied. And this is going, as you can see, the benefits for security is massive. We can then know who's in the country at any given time. We can track them. We can communicate with them and make sure that they don't overstay. But at the same time, it's going to create a revolutionary improvement in the quality and the experience that someone has when they visit South Africa. So the ETA is really the signature reform, but we also have a number of other initiatives that are focused on things like the creative sector. This is sporting events, cultural events, music concerts, but then also the film industry, for example, where South Africa has huge potential and where we've lost investment because of the inefficiency of the visa system. So we're also working on a dedicated online platform for those sectors, just like we've done with the Trusted Tour Operator Scheme. I'm very excited that the combination of all of these different reforms, really led by the ETA, is going to really position South Africa much better as an international travel destination.
Look, as you said, right, funding investment into this overhaul is not nearly where it needs to be for a department tasked with what? Executing one of the most ambitious post-1994 transformations in the state. I mean, that fiscal envelope is pretty tight. You continue to work on self-financing and alternative revenue sources to unlock greater investments. I mean, what are some of the options you're tapping?
Yeah, I think, again, your attitude is critically important. If you are just going to throw your hands up and say, oh, there's no money, we won't do anything for the next 5 years. I mean, that's part of why the country is where it is. We have to work with urgency. We have to work with an attitude of solving problems and not just identifying them. And that is really the approach that we have taken at Home Affairs. And there are a number of things that we are doing to make sure that we have the resources, not only for now, but actually going into the future to maintain the kind of systems that we require. So the first one is we have identified the online verification service that banks, insurers, and other financial sector players use as one of the key enablers of the reforms that we're trying to implement. But what we found, as with so much else, is that it was really on the verge of collapse. We found that more than 50% of those verification attempts, where if someone wants to open a bank account, they have to go and look into a camera or put their fingers on a fingerprint scanner, that checks against the Home Affairs database to confirm your identity. More than 50% of those attempts failed. And even when they worked, it sometimes took 24 hours just to get a response. So, you know, we identified that as a big constraint on South Africa's financial security, first of all, but also as a constraint for Home Affairs more broadly, because it led to some of the system offline challenges that we were facing at our offices. And it also led, because the price was so low on using that service, it led to overuse. It led to people pushing millions of requests through really powerful upgrade that now the error rate is well below 1%. It does verifications on average in less than a second. And the users that we've spoken to are very, very confident in the ability of this upgraded verification service. But we've also corrected the fee structure, because for 12 years, the fee structure was not corrected. People were paying only 15 cents or 10 cents to do a verification against the database. And that had systematically robbed the department of the resources it actually needed to maintain it, which is why it was failing more than 50% of the time. So we've corrected the fee structure, and that is going to help us really maintain this foundational service, because without that, you know, our financial sector is in peril. The state uses this service on a daily basis. And of course, Home Affairs reform hinges on getting the verification side right so that we can confirm someone's identity, which is really the foundation for everything we're doing. I can also just mention the other part. There are other ways of addressing the self-financing issue. The ETA itself is going to assist us, because it means that when a tourist pays a visa fee, that money is not going anywhere else. It's going straight into the Home Affairs side of the equation. And that's a really great revenue source, where we're able to collect revenue from non-South Africans within reason. But still then use that to invest in better systems going forward. So we're looking at all these possibilities to make sure that we do everything we can before we have to go to Treasury for additional funding.
Yeah, and partnership with the private sector as well. I mean, you alluded to, and it's been making headlines, right? The kind of collaboration and partnership you're going into with the banking sector itself, with the financial players within the financial services industry. But where you touched on the fact that, you know, attitude is a key and a pivotal point here, Minister. Some have said, you know, is this not the private sector again stepping in to pick up the slack? Or do we have to, you know, institute a mindset shift here? Are we at a point where we accept that this is the reality and this collaborative effort all the way through is the only way things are going to work given the constraints you face?
I think the foundational question you have to ask is, what do you care about? Do you care about the person who has to get up at 4 a.m, take a day off work in their minimum wage job, travel 4 hours to get to Home Affairs and then stand in a queue all day, then be turned away because the system is offline and then have to come back because there aren't enough staff members there? Do you care about that person, or do you care about some kind of esoteric debate? My answer is very simple. My job is to care about that person and to make their experience better. And I'm going to do whatever is required to make sure that that happens. And when we have that shift, when we actually care about outcomes, rather than endless debates and talk shops and discussions, then you suddenly find, well, the solutions can be quite straightforward. Because in the case of the cooperation with the banks, of course, for the past decade or so, or I think since 2016, Home Affairs has had a presence in 30 bank branches across the country, where it has delivered smart ID and passport services. So if you care about the experience that the client has, the first question you would ask is, okay, that's quite a popular service. People complain. The biggest problem with it is that they can't find enough booking slots. So why is it only in 30 bank branches? If it's working, why is it so limited? And then you find the answer is because the model is wrong. The model is based on basically replicating a small Home Affairs office inside the bank branch. So you duplicate an official duplicate, a fingerprint scanner, a camera, and an IT platform, all of which the bank already has, and all of which the bank already has integrated with Home Affairs because it has to do the verification service that I was describing. And then it becomes a very logical next question to say, well, why do we need to duplicate all of these resources when we don't have enough money? We don't have enough officials. We could never go beyond 30 bank branches if we continued with that model. Let's use technology to do away with the need for this duplication. Let's use the existing online verification service integration and just piggyback the smart ID and passport services onto this. And I think now what you're going to see is those people can continue to have their little debates for the rest of time, because very soon South Africans will be able to go to hundreds of bank branches all across the country, even in the most rural parts of South Africa. They will walk in there, they will interact with a camera, and they will be able to order a smart ID or a passport. In some cases, soon they'll be able to have it delivered to their doorstep. And soon after that, they'll be able to open the same banking app that they use to manage their finances, to also manage their identity services and be able to order a smart ID or a passport there. So at the end of the day, I think the answer is very simple. Do you care about making life easier for South Africans? And if the answer to that is yes, then all you will do is make sure you find these kind of opportunities to do so. And to answer your question, this is the way we're going to fix things in South Africa going forward. And it's not only really a discussion about public or private sector. It is a discussion about leadership. It is a discussion that says, do we have leadership that are actually interested in solving problems? Or do we have leadership that are interested in just being seen to be doing something? Do we have leadership that is just populist and trying to exploit problems? And that's really where I think the future debate in South Africa is going to go. It is about a country where people are hungry for actual practical solutions. They are tired of endless debates and discussions, and they want to see their elected officials getting things done. And I think this is where the story of Home Affairs is important for South Africa as a whole, beyond a particular department or beyond even just party politics. It is important that South Africans can see that things can get better, that even the most broken parts of the state can be fixed if people are there for the right reasons, if they actually care about fixing the problem rather than anything else, lining their own pockets or exploiting problems or whatever the case may be. And I think that that is a very important message for our country, because many people have lost hope. Many people think that things can never get better. And I'm on a mission to make sure that we make Home Affairs better, so that we can ultimately say, if we could take this department, which everyone said was a poison chalice, and you know they had all kinds of bad nicknames for it, if that department can modernize, if it can embrace technological solutions, if it can embrace collaboration with other partners in society, and that makes your life better, well, then surely we can do the same in other parts of the state and of our country.
Minister, you know, it seems almost counterintuitive, right, that we're looking at one of the most underfunded entities in the state, but where adequate funding, if managed effectively, has the potential to unlock a more efficient system that will act as an economic catalyst. As you lay all of this out, you start to build a level of trust that things can be turned around. But here's where the skepticism creeps in, right? Digitization alone cannot deliver institutional renewal. Technology can't solve things like inadequate training, lack of basic public administration skills, even just chronic constitutional illiteracy amongst frontline staff. All of that plays a central role to any rights-based and service-orientated reform. So how do you change the culture and push for the professionalization of the public service within your department and internally?
I think that digital transformation is a tool to drive institutional change. And I think this is where people sometimes, if you look at it too superficially, then you miss this point. The goal of our digital transformation journey in Home Affairs is not to take existing manual processes that are beset with corruption or bureaucracy and just build a website for them. Mm. Our job is to use the opportunities that technology provides to re-engineer the entire process, to ask to go back to the first principles and ask questions like, is this document really required? If we get this document from someone, what do we do with it? Does someone ever really check it? What is the purpose of this particular step in a particular process? So we are fundamentally re-engineering the entire process of how the state operates in this domain. And we're able to do that because technology creates the opportunity for us to look afresh at how government services can be delivered. And that is why you are seeing the kind of innovation. It is not only really about technology. You are right about that. It is about a mindset shift. But that mindset shift is brought about because new ways of doing things have become possible. And we would be very negligent in our duty if we don't use that opportunity to go and ask those fundamental questions. So there are many other things that we're doing that we can still talk about. We're training thousands of our officials in digital skills. I think we've spoken about the anti-corruption drive, which is part of reframing the institutional culture and the ethical standard that we're requiring. But also, as I say, the key thing is to not view technology as a plaster that you put on a wound, but that you view technology as an enabler that allows you to ask questions about the most fundamental things. So the old phrase about this, it's always been done this way. That is the thing that we are tackling, and we're using technology as our greatest ally to open up our ways of thinking, to open up our culture, our organizational structure, the way we do business, to make sure that we reframe for a modern age and reposition this department and the state for a modern age. But there's also the critical point I want to reemphasize, that a big part of this work is to automate routine things that don't require Home Affairs officials to really spend so much time on.
Yeah.
And I want to say there's nothing worse than being a dedicated Home Affairs official who has to deal with a client who's been standing in the rain for 6 hours, and then you're the person who has to tell them that the system is offline. So we're also using this to create a better work environment for Home Affairs officials, where we take the pressure off from those routine cases and we manage to get them to actually deal with their workload in a manageable way. Before I came in, the complaint was that Home Affairs had only 40% of the staff that it required under the previous sort of brick and mortar model that it was using. So people were just completely drowning in the amount of work. If we can get the routine transactions out, then we can get Home Affairs, the officials, to do the job that computers can't do, which is to go into communities, meet with South Africans who have been left behind, who have never been documented, and actually go and do the hard work of building family trees for those people, of documenting each and every one of them systematically. And again, of course, we will use technology in that process. But that is the kind of work I think Home Affairs is going to be doing much more in the future, focused on delivering dignity for South Africans who have been left behind or who are excluded.
Minister, good luck to you as you pursue key reforms, tough, decisive reforms to build back up the institutional integrity of the Department of Home Affairs. We're going to have to leave the conversation there for now. Thanks so much for having taken the time to be with us and for joining us in conversation on the Think Big series today. To those of you who have been watching, remember, the series is free, it's shareable, it's accessible to anyone, whether you're a PSG client or not. So do keep the conversation going using the hashtag ThinkBigPSG. From me, Alicia Sekhem, it's goodbye. Until next time.